CliffCentral.com.
So we've probably all heard the saying, experience is the best teacher. Is it then safe to assume that everyone who can motivate us through our toughest life challenges have probably been through them and lived to tell the tale? But does experience really guarantee learning? Is it always a given that you'll see the wise things of a bad thing, or does it take a special kind of character to turn their obstacles into potential? We've brought in Bridget Moema today, and as you might have guessed, she used to be a domestic worker. She's now a motivational speaker, and she's just released her first book, Being Refined, The Seed of Hope. The ability for some to turn their misfortunes into fortune is a skill worth bottling, or in this case, getting on record. So welcome, Bridget, to the Made Sessions on CliffCentral.com.
Thank you so much.
She brought along her mentee. She's a young and beautiful woman by the name of Letlotlo Matabane.
Letlotlo, right? No, it's not an easy one. And yeah. Tulis is Burundian / Congolese.
Okay.
It's a bit of a struggle.
It's okay. No forgiving.
So she is Miss Inspire South Africa Teen Second Princess 2017. We'll catch up with her a little later, but for now, welcome to the both of you. We're very happy to have you.
Thank you so much.
So pleased to have you, because actually, you know, I think we find a lot of inspiring women who are kind of on a journey, but to find somebody who it sounds like had a plan from the start. I mean, my understanding is that you chose to do domestic work so that you could put yourself through school. So you didn't even start doing domestic work and then realize along the way that you wanted more. You knew from the very beginning, which is awesome. So just like take us back to like briefly, I guess, how you grew up and then how you found yourself in that industry.
Okay, greetings once again. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Absolute pleasure.
Bridget Moema was born and raised in the dusty path of Ramotsi in Hammanskraal, and she did her matric in 2008.
I love that you speak about yourself in the third person, by the way. I love it. Go ahead.
Yeah,
I
think
basically, so confident.
Yeah, as I said, I grew up in Hammanskraal, and my parents, we grew up in a very good family, I can say. Unfortunately, my parents separated when I was doing grade 12, and my mom, you know, she didn't have any job.
Okay, so your mother didn't have a job. What did your dad do?
My dad is a maintenance. So what happened was then I left at home, and now I'm done with matric and I've got, you know, B, like bachelor. And I had dreams, you know. I was somebody who knew.
So you got into university? You'd applied and everything after matric?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
And I went to TAFLIOP. I wanted to do law.
Okay.
So when I get there, the problem was I didn't have money for registration. Little did I know that it's possible for you, you know, to apply even if you don't have money. So my mom asked my uncle for money, and they gave me money. When I was supposed to pay, I realized this is a lot of money. And I can say that time it was 1.5, but I realized my mom wouldn't be able to pay it back.
You know? Right.
So I packed my bag, I went back home.
Wow.
And when I got home, I realized crying won't help me. And I said to myself, you know what, I'm going to look for a job. So firstly, I worked as a factory worker for 6 months before.
A factory worker?
Yes.
What kind of factory?
They evergreen latex, I'm sorry to mention it,
no,
but
it's all
they
good.
Do gloves.
Okay.
So when I get there, the first thing they asked for was matric certificate. I was like, wow, this is a real job. You know what I mean? And one of the ladies will always ask me, like, are you in that challenge that you have to work this hard work? Because young people leave. And I said to her, not really, but I'm going to school next year.
So tell me about working at the factory. Your colleagues or the people who did the same work as you,
yes,
had they matriculated? Was that a requirement?
It was the requirement that year, but most of them were elderly people.
They were elderly,
so young people work for 2 days, they'll never come back.
Right.
So that's why they'll keep on asking me, like, are you that challenged that you... And I said to them, I'm going to school next year. I could see their faces, you know. It was like, a baby girl, get serious. You know, this is not possible. And
sure, because they felt like it was a dead end.
You know what I mean?
And had a lot of them been stuck in that job for a long time?
Yes. Like, you know, but the other thing is not only them, even my mom. You
right.
know? Like, she never said anything, but her face, you could see that she was just scared for me to say, it's not going to happen.
It's so weird how people think certain jobs are dream killers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, even if you, and I think for... I think for a lot of people, domestic work can seem that way too. And I actually think that you know, there are probably people who go into it with the best intentions, either to support themselves or their families or to try and put themselves through school, but who get stuck. And I suppose factory work is also that type of environment where you can get stuck. But let's talk a bit about that. Like, what do you think it is? What was it about that environment where people, that made people think that you wouldn't ever get out?
I think sometimes it's the environment that you find yourself in. Let's say, for example, you come from the location, you know, like townships. You think that this is all, you know, life whereby you survive. This is all. But when you want something, you know, when you want to pursue something better than yourself, then that's when you realize that this is, you know, yes, it's the beginning of, you know, it's the start, but there's better place to go to.
But they didn't believe.
No.
So that must have been hard for you.
Yeah, it was hard. But at the same time, as I said, I will encourage myself every day.
Okay.
And after 6 months, my aunt came back home and said to my mom, I found a job for you. And my mom was like, wow. And then she said, you're going to work for this lady. You're going to be a domestic worker. My mom was like, not me. I can't do that. And it's because my mom is somebody who has personal pride,
yes,
you know, which everybody has. You
sure,
know?
Sure.
Not that she's... Everybody has self-pride to say, I won't take my level to that low. And I said, how much? She mentioned it. I said, I'll do it. My mom cried.
Where does that come from? So, like, I mean, I can't imagine myself motivating myself in that situation without any support structure. If I was surrounded by people who were naysayers, who didn't believe, or people who had too much pride for certain work, you know, if constantly I felt like there were elements around me that were demotivating me, I don't know if I could find it in myself to push forward. And so what was it? Where do you get that thing from?
Okay, basically where I come from, as I say, it's a township, and there's another township, you know, Temba. So in the other township, you'll see people driving, you'll see people succeeding. So each and every time when I will pass there, this will bother me, especially young people, to say, I can do it. I can get there.
Okay.
So that's what pushed me. So then I took the job. I took the job. And yeah.
And your mom, so you said your mom cried and she was unhappy.
Yes. And but I took the job.
What was that conversation like with her?
She said, I can't, I really can't take, you know, I can't go that low. When I told her that, do it then, if you don't want me to do it. And she said, I can't go that low. So, yeah, that's why I did it. I did it for 6 months.
Did that affect your relationship with her?
No.
Okay.
No. Yeah. She ended up, you know, accepting it.
Right.
And yeah, and I went to the family. The family was so beautiful. And I'm so grateful for that family.
Okay, so tell us about the family then.
Oh, beautiful family. All the kids are successful. And, you know, I didn't feel like, I knew like I'm a domestic worker, but the family is so kind. You know, when they come visit, like, it's like we all work. It was like, for them, it was to give me money to save. You know, I can't say I work that much, but, you know, they are so beautiful.
Was there anything about the job, though, that was hard for you? So you'd never been a domestic worker. Did you have friends or aunts or any relatives that were domestic?
Yeah, my aunt.
So did you know about the work?
Yes, because my aunt, I used to go with my aunt
okay.
To the same family. Yeah, so.
But still, when you arrived, was there anything, especially coming, you know, from a family with a mother with a lot of pride, and pride gets passed down. It's something you have to constantly push back against,
yes,
right? It's difficult. And then you were somebody with dreams, you know, who wanted a better life for herself. Is there anything about that kind of work that you had to do that you found hard on your self-esteem?
What I can say is it was not an easy road per se as it seems. You know, there were days where I wake up in the morning, I'm like, I can't do this, Lord. You know, but at the end of the day, as I said, that family made it possible for me, you know, to keep on going, you know. So, and the other thing is their house. And I'm like, I'm going to build my mom this house.
Was it beautiful? So you, that was inspiring for you to work for that kind of family,
yes,
who lived well.
Yes. And,
was, okay.
And for me is, as much as I'm also one person who have, so, like, I have confidence in myself. You know, I wouldn't, when I.
Yeah, a lot.
When I talk to them, you know, I will talk their talk. I will cook their food, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, there was nothing.
So were they surprised, do you think?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, like, you know, I will go to restaurants with them. I will, you know what I mean? It was not, if I was in, let's say, for example, there's a family gathering, you wouldn't think she's the worker here. You know, think she's part of the family because I carried myself that way. You know, to say I'm part of this family and I'm here because I want something better than myself.
But there have to have been moments where you felt, because the power dynamic, you know, it's we can't deny the power dynamic between an employer and a domestic worker,
Yes.
And we can't deny that the scope of work you have to do as a domestic worker ranges from, you know, things that you might enjoy, like cooking and looking after the kids, to things that nobody would enjoy, like I don't know, like cleaning up after people, you know, and like hygienic things that are difficult. So there must have been those things.
Okay, the lucky part was, it was a young lady, and it was the mother and the granny. So there was nothing that I will say it was, like I will cry and say.
There were no men in the home.
No.
Oh, that's not.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I said it. That's nice.
But yeah, but you know, there was nothing that was odd from what I would do at home, you know. So that's what I'm saying. I believe that that family wanted to give me the opportunity, you know, to earn something. You know, it was not because they just wanted a worker. Yeah.
Okay, so what did your job entail? You said there was a grandmother.
And then an elderly lady and then a little... like the daughter of
so it was like three generations.
Yeah.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah. So it was like home.
Okay.
You know. So we'll share what we have to do.
There's something. Did you stay in?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
For how long did you do that job?
I did it for 6 months.
6 months.
Then after 6 months, I got admission at the UP.
Oh.
Then I basically, as I said, I wanted to be a
Dukes
lawyer.
Dukes of Nix.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to be a lawyer. So they because I couldn't qualify there.
Right.
And they took me for political science. And that lady, one of the family members, said to me, take education. And I said, okay, fine, let me try it. And I took it and I discovered myself in education. So I've been a teacher for 3 years now.
Okay. But before we go there, I kind of, so I want to interrogate that 6 months a little bit more. Okay. So you say you were somebody who was confident and you lived with a family who was supportive. So you didn't feel a lot of stigma.
The thing is, what I can say is outside, you know, I wouldn't want my friends to know.
So, yeah. So let's talk about that. Like socially, I mean, who are the people you were able to share this with? So your mom knew.
My mom, my
so
family.
So your family must have known.
But my friends, you know, me and my friends, I still remember, when we were at matric, were so arrogant. You know, we're like, I want to call you next year and ask you what you're doing for a living.
Right, right.
So the whole year, I'm telling you the truth, we didn't call each other. Not being aware that my friends were also at home, you know. And next year, they were also like, that's when they went to varsity.
Did you find it funny how shame does that
yes.
to everyone?
Yes, that's what like, I'm saying. The shame was there, you know.
You hide. And sometimes it's not as bad as you think and people can relate. Because actually, we all are going through something.
But I can say...
But you always assume you're the only one in the world, you know?
Thank you. It was a lonely road because I had no friends. You know, I only had family. So it was kind of like a lonely road.
What about dating?
No. You know, what I told myself was I want to see myself achieving. There's this thing that we see in the like, townships where... ladies will be proud to be on a man's car seat. My thing, that's my thing. I'll sit in my car seat first before I sit in a man's car seat. And that's what happened.
I love that.
Yeah.
All right, so you eventually got into UP.
Yes.
And you were going for law, but you ended up studying what?
Education.
Education.
Yes.
Okay.
So I did my BEd in record, and I did theology. I'm still busy with it.
So had you saved enough money from the factory work to the domestic work? Had you saved enough money?
The money helped me for registration.
For registration,
yes.
Okay.
And I still remember I couldn't afford the money because I was buying clothes and getting ready. I was ready. And I paid for registration and I got raised. I can't travel. And they said, you can't move in because you don't have money to pay for raise. And I'm telling you, the whole week I'll go to the administrative block, sitting outside. In the morning when they arrive, they'll see me sitting there.
Who are you? Where does the stamina come from?
Like, to be honest, I can say it's grace. Because I'll go in the morning, I'll sit there outside, and they will walk in. And I remember, I think it was Thursday, the lady called me in and throw me the keys and said, you know what, move in.
Really?
Yeah, and I moved in. And every term, I'll take my marks and I'll say to her, like the way she did it with me with the keys, throw the paper and say, look at my marks. And because I'm somebody who doesn't, I forgive, like I don't have grudges. Mm. So I wouldn't just, you know, like said, you know, she was sick with my marks, but I'll go and make fun, you know, like, and take a chocolate for her, cold drink or something for her to say, look at me, you know, I'm making you proud, you know.
Mm.
So, yeah, so everything was never a smooth road. That's what I can say. And maybe it will lead us to understand the book, why I wrote the book.
When did you write it?
Last year.
Okay.
It took me.
So how old are you? If you don't mind me asking.
I've got my mentee here, so yeah. But okay, it's
no, fun. But I kind of want a sense of time frames.
Okay, I'm 27.
You're 27?
I'm old.
You're little.
Oh, no, man.
No, you're little. You're so young. It sounds like, no, serious. You've had like such a rich and like such a difficult journey, you know, that one can assume that it takes a lot longer than that.
Yeah.
Okay, but so you're 27 and you graduated from UP, huh?
Yes, and I graduated last year from Holy Nation. I'm still carrying on with my theology as the other aspect of my life.
Theology. Yeah. Tell us a bit about that.
I believe I'm called to be a pastor, but yeah, it's a story for another day. But I believe I'm called. But at the same time, I have more interest on knowing the depth of the Word of God.
Right.
So that's when I enrolled.
So what role, how big a role then did your faith play, do you think, in
huge
getting
role.
You through?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. I couldn't make it without God. I couldn't make it without Him. You know, there's a scripture that it keeps me going. He knows the way I take. It's in Job. After He has tested me, I shall come out as gold.
Mm.
That is the scripture that I often said, you know, there are scriptures, but until it's revealed to you, then you'll understand.
Where do you get your faith from? From your family, or is it something that you've kind of embarked on your own?
My mom started going to church when I was maybe in matric or so.
Oh, okay.
So the school that I went to, there was SCA. And there was a time when I was doing grade 8, and this group of people came and they told us about Christ, and I received Christ that day. I remember us crying and all that, but that's where my journey began.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, so back to the book, Being Refined, you wrote it last year.
Yeah.
And what led, how has it been a work in progress for a long time? Or is it something that, where you had like an aha moment and you knew you had
something
to do it?
Triggered it.
Okay, so tell us.
As I work in Queenswood, I was staying in Queenswood.
What were you doing there?
I'm a teacher.
Oh, okay, so you were teaching, yes.
Yes. All right. So I was living in Queenswood, and my little sister is doing matric this year. So I said, you know what? As much as I usher these young ladies, I need to usher my little sister as well, you know, mentor her. So I decided to move back home. So there was a day when I was traveling using a bus, and as I was walking in my neighborhood, I saw two groups of people. The first one was a lady with school uniform sitting in a GTI in front seat, and she was laughing and said in Setswana, "Nana hana gore ke sitia hai e permanent." And there was another group.
No, but you have to translate that.
Okay, she thought this is a permanent seat, you know, and they're students, by the way. And another group that
So this is a guy's GTI, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
How old is she?
She's young.
Yes.
She's in high school, though.
That thing creeps in early, hey?
Yeah.
That mindset.
Yeah. So there was another group as well coming from afternoon study. I saw their eagerness to want to study. But for me was, I don't want these young people to see that glory. I don't want to see them where I am, but I want to take them through the journey so that they understand that the journey is never easy, but you can do it.
Mm.
So I didn't want to fail my kids.
Mm.
I didn't want to fail
them. So your kids being the kids that you were teaching?
Kids that I teach, kids in my neighborhood. I call them my babies. They're my kids.
Okay.
So every child, you know, that I see that I come across.
So you must have been quite a motivational teacher, huh? And I'll let her tell us about that just now. But, okay, so, yes. So you didn't want to fail. You didn't want to fail the kids in the community. Your children. You felt like they were yours.
Yes.
Even though you're 27.
Yes.
You still felt like they were yours, and you didn't want to fail them.
Yes.
And this led to what then?
Writing the book. I wrote the book in a month.
In a month.
Yeah. And because I was.
I'm sorry, what?
In a month.
This is unreal.
Yeah.
And can I just, this is, a, I mean, this is,
yeah.
That's a 72-page book. I mean, it's a book. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's definitely not a short story.
Yeah, and when I wanted to carry on, I was like to my friend, Andy, so this book is too small. She said to me, Bridget, the seed is too small, but it produces trees. The book was launched.
Okay, so tell us what it's about.
Being refined. For you to become gold, you have to go through things.
Okay, so is it your life story, or is it
it's my life story.
Lessons from your story?
Yes.
It's autobiographical. So there's stuff in there about you.
Yes.
Okay.
But basically, it's my journey.
Mm.
And why the seed of hope at the end is because being refined after you have been going through all these things, you're becoming refined. Then when you've been refined, then I believe that now you must give hope to others.
Mm.
So that's why I'm saying it's a seed of hope.
Mm.
And you must give hope to others because you've traveled the road.
So give us an idea of the kind of wisdom, the kind of stories we'll find in the pages.
Okay, let me just go through quick. I'll explain it to you what is in this book. The dusty path of Ramodes, I've explained where I come from. And the construction, I wanted people to understand that I'm not yet there. It's a journey. So that's why I'm saying I'm under construction.
Okay.
There are certain things that I've learned,
right,
but I'm still going to learn them even more.
Right.
And I said the story that I was never told. I never told my friends that I was a domestic worker
because
shame will cripple you. Shame will take away, you know, that hope because I was ashamed, you know, to tell people that I was a domestic worker. Instead, I told them that I was working in some shop, you know.
Of course.
Yeah. And faith is painful. It was never easy. You know, people, particularly because, as I said, I believe I'm called to be a pastor.
Mm.
People come to the church and they expect to be blessed within a week or so. And when they see things not happening, they leave.
Mm.
So they must understand faith is painful.
Mm.
Humble yourself before God. I was an arrogant person, as I said, but I had to be humbled. I had to go work for somebody. I had to do all those jobs so that I can see, I can respect a domestic worker.
Mm.
I can respect a factory worker.
Mm.
I had to be humble.
That's incredible.
A place of surrender. Sorry. You cannot travel. They often say, hurt people, hurt others. There was a time when I realized.
Yeah, that's true.
When I get to varsity, I realized that everything that I went through, there was anger, there was bitterness, there was, you know, there was hurt. I had to let go. I had to heal. You know, my four years in university, I was healing because I understood that I had to go to this big world. I have to love these people. You cannot give love if you don't love yourself.
Mm.
You know, you cannot.
Did you go through a bit of depression?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes. Yeah,
I did. Naturally, hey?
Yeah, no, I did. There were times where committing suicide came to my mind.
Right, of course, yeah, of course. But, and what, what was your, what was your refuge, I guess, or your
my Bible,
your source of
my Bible
strength?
Yeah, my Bible
during those times.
Yeah, because
was your faith, huh?
Yeah, I remember my friends were not there anymore, so the only thing I had was my hard copy Bible, and I could just cry. And I used to write, but yeah, not much, you know, to say. Yeah,
but I mean, also I think sure, because in Black communities, we have such a weird relationship, such an estranged relationship to depression. You know what I mean? It's almost, I almost want to say there's a bit of a taboo about it. Do you know what I mean? Because like our parents went through so much, right?
Yes.
That there's kind of this unspoken expectation that you will endure. You know what I mean?
That's true.
And you will get through anything. And then you kind of go to schools where you're exposed to different cultures. And then in Western culture, particularly, depression becomes this thing that is accommodated. Like you're having a really long, bad day.
Mm.
And life must accommodate you, right? Like your studies must accommodate you. Your family must accommodate your friends. You must find treatment.
That's true.
And there's... You know, either you see a psychologist or psychiatrist and you get medication, but there's like this this infrastructure for this thing that is quite foreign to Black communities and to Black culture.
Mm.
So in the moments that you felt suicidal, Was there ever a thought in your mind to like reach out to a counselor, to get a psychologist, to seek out, to see if there's medication, any of those things?
Let me tell you something. The first people that came to my mind was my pastor, but I couldn't trust him. You know, the church, the people in the church, I couldn't trust them. There was no one. There was no one that I could trust. I'm telling you. That's the sad part about it. You know, that's why I chose to be a blessing. I chose to forgive. That's why I'm doing this thing for these young people, you know, being there for them, because we live in a society where when you share your story.
What about your peers? I mean, you're in varsity, so.
Oh, you mean adversity? No, adversity, that's where I got healing. Okay. I thought you said back. Okay. Adversity, that's where I got healing. I still, you know, this lady, Linda Headbush, you know, when I got there, she was part of well-being house committees, and she taught us a lot of things. Like, you know, being with her, talking to her, she...
So this depression that you're talking about started prior to varsity. So were you referring to high school?
I'm talking about when, after 2009, when I was working and...
Right. Yeah, so when you were in between.
Yes. Okay. There was no one to talk to.
Okay.
But varsity, that's where I found people. That's where I got my healing.
Okay.
I call it, was my retreat for me to go to that place for 4 years.
Okay.
You know, because I understood that if I had to be a mother... You know, I can't go on like this. I need to heal.
Right.
You know, I need to... You can't give what you don't have.
You absolutely cannot. And with that, I actually threw you, of course. So you were still going through it.
Yeah, the story of Jabez is the same story. You know, Jabez is in the Bible. They said that when the mom gave birth to him, she went through pain. Then she called her Jabez because she went through pain, which means pain. But when he prayed, he said, God, help me not to become pain. That's my prayer. I said to the Lord, I want to be a blessing. Not pain to other people. Can I be a blessing? Finding my identity. I found my identity. You know, I know who I am. I know who Bridget is. I know my limits. You know, and peace. You know, people who don't have peace, they hate others. People who don't have peace, they are trouble. So I'm at peace. You know, through it all. Bridget went through a lot, but Bridget can still love, can still forgive, can still give, can still smile, can still, because I went through the healing
process. But I also love that you acknowledge that you're still on a journey.
I am.
You know what I mean? Because I think a lot of people write books when they feel like they've arrived somewhere. And no one ever really arrives anywhere.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, we'll be stuck.
And so all you can do is give people kind of an account of what you've been through so far, what you've learned, and what you hope to achieve.
Yes, that's true.
But there's certainly no way, and hope that they can benefit something from that, yes. Knowing that you haven't arrived.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That you're not this this kind of this guru or this authority, you know? And I think that's good for people to... no matter where you are in your success, just to acknowledge that it's a work in progress.
That's true.
Because then I think people don't hold you to these kind of unfailing expectations,
yes.
You know? And it also makes you more relatable. It makes it makes, you know, you sound like you're somebody who's learned a lot, but you sound like somebody I can still relate to if I'm not where you are, you know? I love that. So how's the book doing so far?
I launched the book the 10th of December last year. I've sold out 200 copies and I've got another.
Well done. Yeah. Where can we find it?
I sell the copies myself.
Okay.
If people are far from my place, then I courier them.
How much is a copy?
70 rand.
70 rand, huh?
Yeah.
And you've sold 200 so far?
Yeah.
Congratulations. And you self-published. Who,
yes.
Who helped you publish?
I went by Boutique Books and my mentor Lindalani Mguni. He's the one who was guiding me through, and other people that I, you know, we fellowship together.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, what I can say is the journey is never easy. But sometimes you need to sit down with yourself, like be your own motivational speaker, be your own inspiration, you know, be honest with yourself. One thing that I've learned in the journey is be honest with yourself, because I believe that if I was not honest with myself, I was going to get this degree, get other qualifications that I have while I'm working in a flat tire, while I'm bitter and I'm angry. There was a point where I looked at myself in the mirror and I said to myself, I'm not okay. And that's when my breakthrough came in. And I said to myself, I'm not okay. I'm angry, I'm bitter, and this is not who I am. So until you become honest.
At what point did you feel that way?
I was doing my first year.
Yeah.
And I was, everything was just replaying, you know, like, you are far from home. This place is like, it's peaceful. You are at rest, you know, and everything, you just have the memories, you know, you just, you know, the emotions, you know, now you're allowed to cry because there was no time to cry. You know, you have to wake up tomorrow and do something about your life. There was no time to cry. You have a test tomorrow. So there was a time where now I am sitting here. I have to cry. I have to face life. And I realized that, you know what, I need to be honest with myself. Then I was like, I'm breaking. I'm not okay. Then that's when I released myself from everything.
I think sometimes avoiding, because we really desperately try to avoid melting down or having a breakdown. Do you know what I mean? But I think what you're avoiding, like you're saying, potentially is a breakthrough. It's like a rite of passage to break down sometimes.
Because the other thing is, you need to know your limitation.
Yeah.
You know, I know that I can be nice, you know, but I don't want to be, I don't want to get to a point where I explode. You know, that's why before I explode, I'll try to deal with myself immediately because I don't want to put things under the carpet. I will solve it. I will deal with it now, you know, to say, let's talk about it because I know if I explode.
So you're also not afraid of your emotions, huh?
No, I'm very fragile. So I need to sort it out.
No, that's cool because people avoid their emotions. Yeah, but no. There's just so much growth, I think, in confronting them. That's awesome. Okay, so I'll let you introduce your mentee.
Okay.
Because you know why you felt like we needed to get to know this young woman. So I'll let you give her a proper introduction.
Okay. Guys, I'm with Letlotlo Matabane. She's Miss Inspire S18, Second Princess. She's the founder of Fresh. She collects sanitary towels for ladies, roll on for the guys. And yeah, she's my baby.
And you used to teach her, huh?
I'm still teaching
her. You still teach her because you teach geography?
Yes.
Okay. And at what high school?
Clapham High School.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah.
Right. So, Letlotlo, tell us, what's your story?
I'm Letlotlo Matabane.
Tell us about Miss Inspire S18, because it sounds like the best thing in the world. I, honestly, I've just been so over beauty pageants for such a long time, and you're absolutely lovely to look at, but I love that your beauty pageant is about more than just beauty, you know? It's about inspiration. So tell us more about it.
Miss Inspire, it's a pageant where we inspire young girls. But I, just because I have Fresh, and Fresh is working with both genders.
Okay.
Well, we cater for both girls and boys.
Okay.
So I don't just inspire girls, but I inspire boys.
So where does this pageant run? In what community?
In Kempton Park. It was held in Sarabi Country Lodge. I was crowned on the 14th of May, a week after launching my organization.
Nice. Did you have a lot of competition?
No.
You're just in a league of your own, huh? Did you know the whole time?
Yeah,
but who won? Let's talk about who won.
It's Lesego.
Yeah.
From Limpopo.
What, do we care? Does she do something we want to know about? No?
No.
No? No, it's your time now. You're right, it's your time now. Okay, and you're just 16, huh?
I'm 16.
Dude, like...
Hard to believe.
I was saying to you earlier, at 16, I was just like, I feel like I was just wasting money and time. To be honest, that's all I did. And then, you know, I just like try to get through school. But definitely wasn't trying to save the world. Well, not yet. So where does this come from? At the age of 16, like, what drives you to want to help people this way?
It's what I love. It's the purpose that I found as I'm growing up, being a teenager. Fresh, it was not called Fresh.
What was it called?
It didn't have a name. It was just something.
Because they're overrated.
It was just something that I loved to do because my family...
That's actually such an interesting principle. That's so cool.
Because
we do. We get caught up in names and in branding, but actually what's most important is the work, right?
It's the work.
That's Awesome. So, okay. Wait, so tell me about the moment you had this idea.
What motivated me, basically, it's my history. When I was in primary, I had a friend who was emotionally bullied for how she smells, her background, she was being abused at home and stuff. So I had a talk with, one day, I was like, you know, I got so emotional at school, I couldn't even concentrate. My parents had to come and collect me at school. So my parents were like, what's going on? What's bothering you? And I told them, my parents were like, no, we could help her out because I'm raised in a family where we help people out, you know, family or not. You are family. You're not a family. Family, it's not by name, the same name that we have.
Mm.
But it's the love, the kindness, and what puts us together. So,
okay, so they said we can help her out, and then you decided you needed to help more than just her.
Yes, because every day you meet a person skipping school.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're a girl and it's the time of the month when you're on your monthly cycle, on average, you miss 4 days. And that on in a year, it makes like a month. So imagine if you miss a month of school and some cannot bear the pressure. You miss assignments, you need to study, you need to write. It's a lot of pressure, especially when you're in primary school, grade 7. You're preparing yourself for high school.
So how does it work?
Fresh. It got its name on the 2nd of February when it was my day one planning. I was like, this is Fresh. Free sanitary hygiene project. We're basically fighting for free sanitary hygiene. Because when you, a lady, to get sanitary towels, it's expensive.
It's very expensive.
It's expensive and people don't afford it. You know.
I don't know why that thing isn't freely available. I don't know how we give away free condoms. Excuse me. But
exactly.
And not free sanitary pads. But
exactly.
Anyway.
So we collect sanitary towels and roll-ons. So I decided to cater for both boys and girls.
So is that, is that something you found that they struggle with? Is just having access to toiletries and antiperspirant, how is that affecting them?
They get bullied.
They get bullied, huh?
And you know, when you're a boy, you want to fit in into groups, but you cannot fit in. You know, smell will defeat you.
Absolutely.
Smelled, even though you,
it
when you're sweating
you
after gym, you're like, okay, I cannot go stand there with
That's
people.
True.
You understand? So they get bullied, they get emotional, frustrated, they skip school. That's why today we have a lot of hawkers.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
So I was like, the rate of dropouts also, it's a lot. It's a lot. You need to decrease. So if we don't stop bullying, we don't get this ideal solution to schools, to the youth, we're going to have a lot of dropouts, which is an added challenge in South Africa.
Flip. Incredible.
Thank you.
Really, really incredible. Oh, wow. You guys are quite a power team over there, okay?
Yeah.
So what is this power team? You guys should have a name or something. Like, work on it, guys. Work on it. What do you guys have planned together, separately, for the future?
This Saturday, we're supporting our friend, our brother, Dimko, Donald Maludeka, a charity organization. He's collecting blankets in Soshanguve. He's situated in Soshanguve. And
it's a glamorous event for
the little ones.
So nice. I'll be hosting the pageant too, being a judge for the little ones.
Oh, lovely. That's fantastic.
So, what else do we have? September, I'm having I'm organizing a women's seminar from 1st, 2nd, 3rd September. Venue is Goodland Estate.
Lovely.
Yeah. Fee is 500 rand. Catering and also the accommodation.
Oh, wow.
I'm taking 20 teenagers and 20 young adults.
That's incredible.
So what else do we have?
I'm planning a brand, an upcoming brand called Focus.
Focus.
My experience is your knowledge. So I'm not planning it. My sister came.
Tell us about Focus.
My sister came up with the idea, Sisi Palisa. So she came up with the idea saying, I'm inspiring her. So she wants to start this brand. She didn't have a name. She just came to us.
The names are not important.
That's why
you've shown us this.
She said that I want to do a motivational talk to motivate this this youth, girls and boys. So she came in and like, what do you have in mind? She said, my experience, your knowledge. And then we started looking for a name, designing logos.
That's cool.
And then I was like, let's go for focus.
So you're going
to
do
it. And she's like, yeah, focus. I always tell you to focus, focus.
So you're going to do a bit of a speaking tour. You're going to go around.
Because I'm a motivational speaker.
Yeah, of course. You must so be. Brigitte, than you are. Than you are. And yeah. I think you guys so actually are a power combo. And it helps that you're different ages as well. And you have different stories, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's such power in that. I actually think, like, motivational speaking has been ruined by people who have turned it into too much of a business.
That's true.
You know? And too much of a money-making
scheme. That's true.
Scheme. Mm. So it is lovely to meet people who do it because, you know, they're in, like in Talisa's introduction, you know, like they do it from love and from experience because they're going through the journey, you know? And they recognize a need. And I mean, to sell 200 books by yourself is no small feat, you know? And a lot of people would have quit halfway through.
And what I can say is about motivation, basically what we're busy doing. For example, when Little Girl had her launch, I just got my friends in, you know? So we get it, you know, like now she's going to have this talk. Basically, we're going to be there without any payment. And we always say, we'll drive. We don't care where you are. Call us. We'll come, you know? We don't care which province.
Did we take you out of school? Are you supposed to be in school right now? Oh, dear. but it's fine. She's with her teacher.
No, mom and dad, they're most supportive.
Okay, so you've told us what you have planned for this year, but for life. You know, just like, what do you dream?
In 2 years' time, I want to see Fresh having its own orphanage home. Its own orphanage home being well established all over the nation, the world. And Focus being helping my sister for Focus to be a well-known brand that do motivational talks. Because on the 15th of July, we're starting with our first talk in Mametlhake High School, which is in Mpumalanga. And then after that, we're going to my hometown in Rustenburg.
Rusty dusty,
hey?
So, yeah we want to see ourselves helping, making this world a better place. We want to see the rate of dropouts being decreased. It's a lot. Teenage pregnancy being decreased.
Yeah.
Bullying stopped.
Yeah.
Violence against women stopped.
Yeah. Shucks. And notice how this woman at the age of 16, where you're supposed to be nothing but self-centered, none of that was about herself.
Yes, that's true.
That's amazing. I just like, because all I said was dream, you know. I didn't say, oh, what do you want for you? I just said dream. And those are your dreams. Yes, sis.
Yeah,
yes. Our country needs you. Our world needs you.
That's true.
Bridget, dream.
What I can say is a mentorship programs. And basically I just wanna push. I'm not yet there, you know. I wanna see myself at the age of 30 being a doctor in theology. And I've realized that psychology is what I'm like. I counsel, I'm motivate more than I teach. So I also wanna be a psychologist at the age of 32 or so, because I wanna push it both. But I wanna be successful, you know. I wanna be that woman, you know.
You're on your way.
But at the same time, my girls, my boys, I want to see them succeeding in life as well. So let's give them a platform. Let's encourage them. Let's love them. You know, that's the most important thing.
Ladies, thank you so, so much for gracing us.
Thank you.
It was an absolute pleasure.
Thanks for being back.
Yeah, and like I said in the beginning, it's great that we didn't know all this beforehand. You know what I mean? It kind of like, it spoils the conversation a bit. I'm really inspired. Thank you so much. I wish you all the best. You're more than welcome back whenever you want. And we can talk more about that too. And guys, thank you for joining us on the Mate Sessions with CliffCentral.com. Hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Talisa, how do you feel?
make sure to go to our Twitter page, that's at Made Project, MAIDE Project, as well as our Facebook page, which is The Made Sessions. Have a very good afternoon.
Girl, I asked you how you feel.
Now she's closing.
Girl,
she's emotional.
She's emotional.
I'm sorry.
Again. Thank you so much. Just. Cliff Central. The revolution. I've got something important to tell you. CliffCentral.com.